Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to our Christmas edition of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Justin Nimmergood. Justin.
Hello, everyone. Happy Monday and happy Christmas Eve, Christmas week, everyone. It's going to be a doozy this week, but we're happy to be with you here today.
Yeah, it's a busy week. Christmas falls on a Wednesday, so we have all today and half day or some of the day tomorrow to get other stuff done, and then it's Christmas Day. So.
It's already here, man. I can't believe it.
Yeah, I know. You know, with the Thanksgiving being on the 28th, it shortened the Christmas season by a week. So, and man, we're feeling the effects now. It's like you said, it's just right here and kind of out of the blue, and gotta be ready to roll with it with whatever we got. So
that's right. And if you're not, too bad.
That's right. It's here anyway.
So, it's here. Yeah, that's so right. Hopefully everyone out there, you know, you've had your, finished your Christmas shopping, because if not, I think by this point, I think even Amazon Prime can't help you out now. I think I have a couple, you know, little onesie twosies that I got to take care of today, but other than that, I am done myself, so I'm stoked about that. How about yourself?
Yeah, pretty much done. Got one left. Maybe two, but I'll be able to get them here in Pleasantville, so to speak, and be able to have things done by tonight. So
nice, good for you. And I know you were, I missed or wasn't able to be on last week, you know, due to my charity golf tournament there. But I don't know, maybe if before we introduce our guest for today. You could just share a little bit about your recent trip. I know you connected with some other UFC folks and had some awesome photos with the belts and everything.
Yeah. Trying to, you know, kind of, I've had, you know, athletes that I've coached before and a little bit kind of into this mindset coaching thing and applying that to equestrian riders and now kind of going north or sideways and trying to get into the UFC space. Looks like I made some good inroads there. I like UFC. I know Dana White probably doesn't pay his fighters as much as he should, but in terms of the fighters, they're just super friendly, super affable, super nice. Pretty not non-stuck up. I mean, even kind of the shittiest fighter has 50 or 60,000 on his or her Instagram. You know what I mean? So it's like, wow. I mean, even, you know, I was, because I was doing some Instagram pings and stuff of the pictures nearly as it was happening and kind of noticing like, geez, you know, all these people are kind of baby influencers in their own right in terms of the metrics they have on some of their social media. So we'll say that UFC has kind of done the fighters right in the Instagram space and the Twitter sphere. But yeah, man, it was, it's always fun, you know, to see the fights. And, so I'm glad to do it. I'll probably do it again here, February 8th. They're going to have a fight near here at the Toyota Center in Houston. So I'm angling toward, I'm going to take my chillins to that one, take my two boys to that one and let them have the experience of meeting fighters and stuff like that. And actually one of them is taking Muay Thai and working on his ground game and striking game and stuff like that. So he's actually, he dabbles in it a little bit as part of his athletic program. So it'll be, and he follows them pretty good. So yeah, so we'll be looking forward to doing that and kind of seeing what 2020 holds with those types of clients. So looking forward to seeing how that goes.
Yeah, that's neat. So, I mean, what was sort of the most interesting or exciting thing that you gleaned from that experience, if you could pinpoint it? I'm sure there's a lot of them, but
I think that there's a work ethic there that these folks have, and it's a dual channel work ethic. I think one is really their own hard work, staying in the gym, and still building skills, because a lot of these people have different belts, either jujitsu or this or that, or, you know, so they're running, since it is mixed martial arts, they're running several belt level disciplines concurrently. And, you know, some old men, they say, yeah, my ground game sucks, but I'm a striker, you know, but I can kind of get through the fight if somebody gets me down. You know, some of the heavyweights won't, you know, they'll just kind of lean on their striking ability. And because it really is kind of a knockout game, in upwards of 200 pounds, you know, you don't really see too many ground submissions in the 250, 260.
Yeah, no.
Weight class. You know, it's kind of fun. And got to talk to one of the fighters, Derek Lewis. He's from Houston, Texas. He's about 260 and, you know, 6'5", and was really yucking it up with him and talking to him about stuff. So it's really fun to see that. And then the other side that they do is they're very cognizant that they are, you know, fan driven, that it's a fan driven, you know, their brand, and not only just UFC, but their brand as a fighter is very, very fan driven. And they're super, I've never seen an organized sport that was, where the talent was so friendly to the fans. I've been to golf tournaments, I've been to baseball, football, basketball, you name it, but I've never, I mean, by two or three standard deviations, these folks are way more friendly, open, and, you know, and maybe that's because UFC is not as popular as NBA. And if it was, then it would be a different deal. But at least at this time, got some folks with a great work ethic, and we got folks that are very sensitive to their fan base. And that's just a great combination, and it's good to see. So.
Yeah, that's neat. And, you know, kind of interesting when you think about guys that are getting the shit kicked out of them, but they're so nice at the same time. But
yeah, I mean, you know, yeah. And then this is probably many of them, it's their only way out. They're just not like, you know, hey, Gary V, what should I do? I have, you know, man, this is who they are. This is what they do. And this is it. You know what I mean? For the most part, it's where they're at in their lives. And so I love it because it gives them that focus. You know what I mean? There is no like, well, should I have a smoothie shop or should I be a fucking fighter? I'm like, oh, you know, it's, I'm a fighter, you know, that's that. So I really like, even these millennial and Z fighters are pretty damn focused, you know, on what it is they're doing right now. So it's always fun to see that some of that old school one trick pony focus in a younger person. So it's kind of a hoot.
Well, good for you. Good for you, yep. Man. I'm glad you had that experience. Yeah, and,
how about yourself?
You know, golf tournament didn't play worth a shit, but it was a beautiful day. And as they say, you know, a good day on the golf course sure beats any day in the office, or a bad day on the golf course rather beats any day in the office. So, you know, I can't be that upset, and it was for a good cause. So, great guys, about 180 of us were out there, booked the course out. So just a great time, beautiful weather too, 70 and sunny, man.
Beautiful, dude. Awesome. Glad to hear.
Well, folks, I'm extremely excited today, and especially on our Christmas edition episode here to have our guest on. And if you've seen our posts for today, you know, sharing a little bit about this gentleman, he's just an absolutely dynamic individual. You know, that is Mr. Andrew Cruz. Now, let me share a little bit about Andrew before we welcome him on. Andrew is an active duty Marine Corps now for over 15 years, and he really brings a depth and breadth of experience to our podcast, which I'm excited, you know, to have him on here today to share some of his nuggets of wisdom and just experience with everyone. Originally, he grew up through humble beginnings as an only child and of a single parent in Ontario, California. Andrew has quickly not only assumed the ranks of the Marine Corps, but also as an entrepreneur. Today, Andrew is the proud owner of three successful businesses outside of his active duty service. One, which is an ATM business serving several small businesses across Southern California. A photo booth business, which is called the Photo Booth Guy, and I'm sure he'll share more about that, serving the event needs of everything from casual parties to extravagant weddings and corporate events across Southern California. And a veteran-owned and operated supplement line serving the needs of active individuals and their training needs nationwide. Outside of business and the Marine Corps, Andrew is married to his wife, Kelly, of 5 years, and together they have a three-year-old daughter, Alani. Without further ado, let's put it together and welcome Mr. Andrew Cruz to our podcast. Andrew, welcome.
Hey, thank you guys. I appreciate the invitation, and I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. Wow,
and you do have the hair going on. Man, I can see him on the screen there. Nice hair, man. He does have some fabulous hair, and he's got some pretty big guns too.
I don't know if you've seen any of his training photos, but he's pretty ripped too.
Got the fade on the sides and all that good stuff. Man.
It's funny, you guys see me live right now, or the photo that Justin blasted up?
No, I'm seeing you live now on Skype. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So anyway.
So Andrew, you know, just tell us, I know I shared a little bit, but, you know, maybe if you could just fill in some of the gaps, share a little bit more about yourself, you know, for the listeners out there.
Yeah, most definitely. So I grew up in Ontario, California, just like Justin mentioned, single parent household. I would say I probably lacked a solid male role model, and I definitely lack self-discipline. College after high school wasn't really a good fit for me at that time. And I was aware of it. So I was looking for alternatives to continue to push forward in life and personal development. That didn't really have to do with going to class. The idea of the military was introduced to me by my mother. She's from Costa Rica, and the ironic part of it is that they don't have a military. And she was one of the big advocates to check out the military or go to college. From there, I checked out the different branches of service. The Marine Corps just really spoke to me with it being the most challenging, the uniforms, the title, the fact that you earn the title United States Marine. And that's the branch that I decided to move forward with. And in 2004, I went to boot camp, probably the hardest thing I ever did in my life for 13 weeks, just being in that controlled environment. But it definitely added a certain level of perspective, and my mindset shifted to be more focused, more disciplined, attention to detail, stuff like that. I would say I grew up quicker than a lot of my peers from that standpoint. But that's essentially where my foundation was laid. And at that time, I had no idea that I'd be pursuing entrepreneurship and being where I am today. But fast forward to where I'm at today, I would say a lot of my Marine Corps experience from attending leadership academies, just positions that I was put into that needed to lead, train, develop the junior Marines, my time in the recruiting environment where there's a huge focus on our development to communicate effectively with consultative sales, but also having coaching conversations, bridging gaps, and generating buy-in from other Marines in order to accomplish a task in an environment where just going through the motions isn't going to cut it, which I'm referring to the recruiting environment. But yeah, I would attribute a lot of where I'm at today to the recruiting environment, the Marine Corps Foundation, because now the photo booth guy, which is the one I'm, I would say, most proud of or the most involved or engaged with. We're wrapping up year three right now. And just as a footnote, so this event event rental business. It's essentially a weekend business that was launched as a part-time thing concurrent to military service. So I feel like the individuals who are working professionals looking for a side hustle or something additional to do, the event rental space is an awesome area to get into because it's something that you can do concurrent to your, let's say, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5.
Yeah, and you know, you bring up a good point, you know, which I'd love to dig a little deeper on, because I mean, for example, just scheduling you for this podcast was you know, somewhat challenging, right? You're a busy guy, you know. Yeah. not only the entrepreneurial you know, businesses that you have going on, but certainly you're, as you called it, your 9 to 5, which is still active duty Marine Corps. So could you, you know, maybe speak a little bit more to, you know, I guess, because I believe that was the first business, or was the ATM business the first business?
ATMs were the, or ATMs was the first business that I dove into, and that's where I got a taste of entrepreneurship and generating supplemental income.
Got it. And what was the precipice for that? You know, what really gave you that spark or that idea to start something, as you call it, your side hustle?
Yeah, so the appealing part of the ATM business was on the basis of do less, make more. The ATM business has a lot of flexibility in regards to time management. You're able to gauge when these machines need to be refilled, depending on how much money you put into them. But it gives you the flexibility of time, gives you calendar control. Mm-hmm. And that was the initial, I guess, sex appeal to it.
Nice.
Yeah. And then from there, it was literally utilizing basic Marine Corps recruiting skills. But it's also very similar to any sales environment where you generate a list. I looked up on Yelp to see what high foot traffic barbershops there were. So I created a list. I made contact. I introduced myself and what I did. I gave a small presentation to the small business owner, and then I gained the commitment, closed the deal in essence, and had the machine delivered, installed, programmed. And then from there, I just would service it once every two to six weeks, just depending on how the foot traffic is at that site.
Nice. It sounds like it's a nice, you know, real nice passive. I mean, it's not totally passive income, but, you know, fairly passive in the sense that it's not a something you have to be a day to day with, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, I know you mentioned barbershops. So was that, you know, especially starting out, your only target niche that you were really going after? I know you've had quite a deal of success with barbershops. And actually, funny enough, I meant to tell you this, you know, Naomi and I were talking the other day, and I think she has a friend that, you know, lots of friends that are in cosmetology and barbering and whatnot, that actually has one of your ATMs installed in their barbershop, actually.
Yeah.
So you're all over, my man.
Yeah. Just trying to spread myself thin. But yeah, so the primary focus for the ATM business for me has been cash only barbershops. The need is definitely there, and it's something that I was very familiar with. I know you can do hotels and other businesses. I don't quite have the formula for foot traffic for those types of businesses, but I do know the basic 3 to 5% of people who walk past an ATM will use it. So that's where the idea of a heavy foot traffic location would be the most lucrative. Where that percentage can get skewed to be higher is in a cash only business that has a fair amount of foot traffic. So with the barbershop, being in the Marine Corps, I get a haircut once a week. A lot of the barbershops that I've gone to have always been cash only. So then at that point, it's you either get cash before you go, or you use the ATM that's there. So the convenience factor of someone just going straight from their house to the barbershop is for sure there.
Nice, nice. And out of need too. And by the way, with a niche that, you know, weekly haircuts, is that pretty typical across the Marine Corps, by the way?
For the Marine Corps, yeah. Yeah, yep. Weekly haircuts.
So you know, let's pivot, or let's switch gears a bit. You know, you mentioned earlier on the Marine Corps recruiting process, if you will, right? And could you maybe talk a little bit more about that? And, you know, for example, if there's certain, you know, 3 to 5 key steps that, you know, are involved in it or whatnot, could you, you know, walk our listeners through what's involved with that Marine Corps recruiting process?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Marine Corps recruiting environment is a very high tempo, fast paced environment. The canvassing recruiter that works in a local area, they're typically assigned to a certain amount of high schools. Our target market that we go to it are for people who are between the ages of 17 and 23. So that'll be your local high schools, junior colleges, some of the four-year institutions, but our focus is community colleges and high schools. We have officer selection teams that go to the four-year universities. Their primary objectives are to prospect and sell, find individuals who would look like they'd be a good fit, generate interest, screen them. Once they're screened, we set up an appointment. At the appointment, the objective is to get a good understanding as to what they're looking to do in life, and then we do our best to show them how they can accomplish that through the Marine Corps. And once they say yes, or when they find an applicant or candidate that wants to move forward in the process, we need to get their vital documents. We take them to MEPS, which is the Military Entrance Processing Station, so that they can do their ASVAB, which is the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery Test. This is essentially what will tell you what they qualify for. So, for example, the Marine Corps has over 350 different jobs grouped into about 30 categories, ranging from infantry, administration, aviation mechanics, aviation electronics, tanks, artillery, stuff like that. So this ASVAB test will give you an idea as to what all categories you qualify for, and then it gives the opportunity to the applicant to pick what occupational field that they would like to go into based off of what they qualify for and what's available. After they do the ASVAB test, they do a medical physical. It's essentially a full physical from head to toe, vision, ears, the whole nine. Essentially, Uncle Sam wants to ensure that they're getting a high quality, healthy individual.
Specimen. Specimen, yeah.
So once someone is mentally and physically qualified, they swear into what's called the delayed entry program. And they typically stay in the delayed entry program for about 6 to 8 months. During that time, they work out with the recruiters on a weekly basis. The role of the recruiter is to ensure that they're mentally and physically prepared to go to Marine Corps Recruit Depot San Diego. The females go to Marine Corps Recruit Depot Paris Island out in South Carolina. And we essentially mentor them, we coach them, we guide them, and set them up for the best success possible. So that way, when they do go to boot camp, they have less of a culture shock. There's no way that a recruiter can mimic the boot camp environment, but we do our best to brace for impact, right? And then we hope for the best once they go down there. They're typically physically ready for sure. I'm not sure how someone can be 100% mentally ready to get hit with that type of environment, but typically the attrition rate is less than, let's say, 5% at boot camp. So what that means is about 95% of the applicants that go to boot camp will make it through. So the washout rate isn't really high. And it really begins to cultivate this mindset, because once you can go through that 13 weeks of becoming a civilian to United States Marine, it definitely gives you a certain level of confidence that you can accomplish anything that you put your mind to, because it's definitely not impossible. It's challenging and it's difficult, but it's definitely possible as long as you don't quit on yourself.
Fascinating.
Excellent.
Absolutely fascinating. Yeah, go ahead, Bruce.
Yeah, I had civilian offices at the Marine Air Group 41, and I had another office at the 14th. And MAG 41 is a squadron kind of thing, and then the 14th was an artillery division. I don't know if it's still that same way. Are you familiar with it? Anyway, but as a recruiter, when there were stark differences between those two, you know, this is here at the Joint Reserve Base in Fort Worth. This is where they're at, those two. So at what point does your person know what group they're going to be a part of? Do they know before they go to Paris Island, or?
So the reservist, if the applicant enlisted for the Marine Corps Reserves, then they have a very good idea in regards to where their job school is going to be, where their reserve unit is going to be. A lot of that's predetermined, but with the active duty side of the house, there's a lot of unknowns. They are guaranteed the occupational field, so it's essentially a category or a genre per se. So, like, for example, aviation mechanics at the recruiting level, they can guarantee an aviation mechanics occupational field, but right. What they can't really guarantee is it going to be fixed wing, is it going to be rotary, and then what kind of form of aircraft it's going to be. That's determined down the pipeline a little further. Aviation, for the most part, their schools are in Pensacola, Florida. And then as they're going through that training pipeline, learning whatever platform it is that they get assigned to, then they get the opportunity to select where they would like to go. For the most part, it's West Coast, East Coast, overseas, and it's performance based. So if you can imagine like a class ranking, if you're top of the class, you get first pick. Gotcha. I'm under the class, last pick.
Roger that. Okay. Yeah. That's something good. So how much of what you do as a recruiter is selling, trying to sell, you know, close the sale on this recruit to get them to choose you guys?
You know, I would say there's a fair amount of sales that goes into it. One thing that I've come to understand, that the longer you're in the sales environment, it's essentially you just become a better effective communicator, with a focus on listening with purpose, getting an understanding of what it is that they're looking for, and then just simply showing them what we have available. If you communicate well through the dialogue of the presentation, then the close of the presentation is almost a formality, because they feel like everything that they're looking for is right there for them. I've trained many recruiters and developed their communication skill sets. And one thing that I've always told them is, in the population, there's going to be, let's say, 33% of people that all they want to do is join the military. For whatever reason, they may or may not be disqualified from service, whether it's health or police involvement, tattoos, or et cetera. There's going to be 33% of people that it doesn't matter what you say, they're not going to have not one bit of interest in the military or the recruiting process. And then there's going to be that 33% of people that have no idea what they want to do post high school, or they don't know where they're going, or what direction they're moving in the education process, whether they're at a community college or a four-year school. And those are the ones who can benefit from effective communication. The 66%. So the 33 that all they want to do is join the military, and the other 33 that or lack direction, or they're not entirely sure what they want to do, or there's something missing. So that 66%, those are those individuals that we need to find and have conversations with, screen, qualify, present to them, and have these conversations. But overall, there's a lot of communication involved.
Yeah, sounds like it. Yeah, I concur. You know, it's just like you said, once you get through the police record, criminal background, and see what the ASVAB is, and see where they fit in. So I just, you know, I actually have found the Marine Corps to be quite a diverse bunch of soldiers and whatnot, and servicemen and women. So for those of you that are out there and have some sort of archetype of what a Marine is, they really are very, very diverse group of military servicemen and women. And so it was a blessing to, you know, to have that exposure on that joint report. I was on this base for 6 years, so it was really, really fun to what one of the guys was so hardcore. He would, you know, he would call like, "Mr. Cameron, time on deck, 13:10. He was on a carry, we got him a job at Raytheon. He was like a chief master, such and such, you know, like an E-8 or something, like high, you know, high sergeant type of guy. And he went out to LA and got a job with Raytheon. They love him, very, very disciplined individual. You know, so it's I was working on the back end when these guys retire, you know, and what they're going to do in civilian life and whatnot. So
it's awesome.
Good stuff, man. Glad to hear your experience with that.
Yeah, it's for sure been positive, hands down, these last 15 years. I wouldn't say that it's been all sunshines and butterflies. There's been some challenges, but you know, you bloom where you're planted, and if there's anything that's going down that's challenging, that's you essentially just leveling up and furthering your own development.
You bloom where you're planted, Justin. I love it, bro.
Yeah. Got a pretty interesting background. So let me ask you this. Next question I had is, can you tell us about your most proud accomplishment so far? And maybe let's two part that for both the Marines and then also from a business perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say from the Marine Corps perspective, just attaining the rank of Gunnery Sergeant, which is an E7 during my tenure. That was definitely a proud moment. And then just the positions that I attained towards this later half of my career that gave me the opportunity to really further develop my leadership experience, but then also empower others and have a really good perspective of leadership in general and servitude in the leadership environment. I would say that's probably the greatest accomplishment during my Marine Corps career. Has been able to empower others and then just personally develop. And then in entrepreneurship, I would say being able to apply the foundation of what the Marine Corps has done for me into the world of business has definitely been a proud moment for me. With the photo booth guy, started out with just me. Like I was the photo booth guy with one rental unit, and with having a goal, reverse engineering, having an idea of what checkpoints I needed to hit and simply just hitting them, I was able to go from one rental unit to three rental units in our first year. And we had 236 events that we conducted in our first year of business. And then year two, I reinvested back into the company and ran with six photo booth units and one what's called a mirror booth. which is super fancy. If you have any high-end events out there, the mirror booth is definitely the way to go for the wow factor. But at that point, now I'm employing my leadership, because now I had a team needing to communicate with them, train, develop, having our core values and our mission statement, keeping them accountable to doing what we need to do, but also effectively communicating with coaching conversations and bridging gaps so that I have their buy-in, because I can't really speak to the civilian kids. For the most part, my team, their ages range from 19 to 22, and I can't really speak to them the way I would speak to junior Marines. So I definitely have to filter that. And through the leadership piece in the recruiting environment, I was able to really hone in on that. So year two, we did 465 events, and then we're about to wrap up year three right now, and we're going to finish out this year with about 700 events. We have 12 rental units, two mirror booths, two iPad booths, and I have a team of 15. Now I've implemented infrastructure with this company where I have essentially my manager, my number two guy, and then from him below the manager, I have four team leaders, and then each team leader has a team of two to four attendants. So instituting Marine Corps leadership, focusing on the leadership principles.
Uh-oh, looks like we lost Andrew there for the moment.
Yeah, well, man, it sounds like he was making a – that was a remark.
Yeah, and he was right in flow, too.
And those mirror people were on the Shark Tank. That's an expensive device to have with the wow thing, so not with the wow factor. So that's a lot of events. Did you say 700 events? Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, he did. Ronan, can you see if you can get him back on here?
But man,
yeah, he's got a really fascinating story, and he's just absolute go-getter. You know, someone that is, I mean, with every one of his business lines, he's out crushing it. I know he's not as active with his ATM business, for example, right now, but you know, has had quite a great deal of success with all of them. Oh, there we go.
He's back.
Yeah, there, sorry about that.
You're back,
and I'm back. But yeah, so just instituting that infrastructure has allowed me to grow. And this it started out as a part-time business. Well, it still is a part-time business, but it's generating multi-six-figure in revenue to where I can create opportunities for other investments and other things that are entrepreneurial.
What do you see as your future? Such as what? What are some other entrepreneurial ventures you're looking to get into once you get amass enough capital?
Yeah, so great question. So in August of 2019, I purchased the franchise rights to a fitness center. It's called the Camp Transformation Center. There's currently over 120 locations across the country. A lot of them are focused in Southern California right now. But I purchased the territory for the city of Eastvale, California, which is about 8 miles east of where I live in Chino Hills. So what I'm looking at is having another repeat year with the photo booth guy. I'm looking to transition out of the Marine Corps August 2020. I'm submitting a request for early retirement and looking forward to opening a gym in the city of Eastvale and being immersed in that community.
Man, that sounds great. Now, how does that interface? Will you sell your supplements in the gym and whatnot? Do you have a supplement line, you're saying?
Yeah, I do have a supplement line. The franchise itself, they have their own supplement line that they sell there. It's essentially their house brand. But with any other franchise, becoming a preferred vendor to sell them your product, there's always going to be red tape. So I don't think it's likely that my product will be sold there.
Now, I want to ask you a question, and I'm out here in Texas, so I just happen to have a child that works for fitness too, or LA Fitness. So he's a GM. You have the franchise to this. You have the rights to the franchise to this gym, and it looks like it may seem like it's more of a full service thing. Or do you have the capability of kind of splintering off from that and creating a gym that's more like these $10, I hate to say it, but you know, these kind of $10, $15, $20 a month type of gyms, or is this more of a full service thing? It is what it is.
So the style of gym, I would say it's their focus is on group classes.
Okay.
Group classes. They became pretty popular with their lose 20 pounds in 6 week challenge. Essentially what it is someone who's not happy with their current physique, or they just need to lose weight for health reasons, or they're looking for a change. This gym, the camp, they came up with this 6 week challenge. It's pretty dialed in. They come up with personalized, tailored meal plans, and the challenge is you pay $500 up front, or it's like $500 or $550. They give you the meal plan. They give you the resources, so the gym to go there 5 days a week, and they do weekly check-ins. They do weekly photos, and if you lose the 20 pounds, then you get your money back. Many people actually accomplish this challenge successfully. Now, where this business does very well is the culture that they create within the four walls. And the culture, or the idea, or the objective of post the 6 week challenge is to convert them into monthly members. And I believe the monthly membership is somewhere between $100 to $120 a month. And they conduct these group style classes. But I would say fitness is their product, but the people is the actual business, and creating that community like environment during those moments of shared suffering, when those individuals are going through their challenges, they hold each other accountable. Now post challenge, here we are Monday at almost 1 o'clock. If at 5 o'clock, Susie, who I'm so accustomed to seeing there at 5 p.m. isn't there, I'm probably going to hit her up on Instagram or Facebook or text her to see if she's all right or this and that, because I like to meet with the people that I've been working out with and whatnot. But so the culture is really what drives the success of this particular gym.
Excellent.
What about any rituals? Can you speak to any rituals that you've developed? I mean, I'm sure you developed quite a few through the Marine Corps, but maybe respective to some of your business lines.
Yes, some rituals that I do. I work out every day, 7 days a week. I feel like it sets the tone for my day, mental clarity, get that blood flow going, and really just pre-planning what I need to do, having an idea of what needs to get accomplished in a week or that day. I would say fairly basic stuff. A lot of it deals with reverse engineering, creating these checkpoints, and then making smaller checkpoints to accomplish the tasks. But it all starts out with the gym. Strong
that's mind. Right.
Yeah, strong body, strong mind.
All right. Here's an interesting one. How about your favorite story of triumph, either in business or it could be in the Marine Corps?
You know what? Favorite moment of triumph, I would say it was boot camp. There's nothing like it. It was the most challenging thing that I had ever done that was more mentally challenging. I was an athlete in high school. So from a physical fitness standpoint, I expected more from the physical fitness standpoint. The part that was most challenging for me was the mental challenge. That was the first time that I had ever been away from home in a controlled environment, not being able to speak or text or instant message any friends or family. The only kind of correspondence that you had was via snail mail, so writing letters and mailing them out. But that created a certain level of mental toughness in my body, to where I became more independent through force, because there was no going home at the end of the day. You could always quit, but there wasn't an ounce of my body that would dare come home, not a United States Marine. So just being taught by force, and it's not like literal force, because they don't force you to do anything. You don't get hit in boot camp, but the mental toughness and that development that I got in boot camp set the tone for my ability to do anything else. I just needed to be guided or coached or mentored, and then set it, forget it. I feel like I can accomplish anything. And it's like the example in that is between the ATM business, the photo booth rental business, the supplement company. It's like, what did all, and the Marine Corps, it's like, what is the common denominator in all of that? They're all very different. They're unique in their own way. But it's just me. It's the mindset. The mindset that has been developed in this organization. I'm a person of systems and processes, and I feel like entrepreneurs, in a sense, they go a certain path that is not exactly constructed already, but they have their own internal systems and processes that they do. And they just apply them to whatever it is that they're doing, and they get a certain level of success, or they learn where they need to pivot to do different in the next go around.
Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. I know we're running up on our time here, just about a minute left. So Andrew, as we close here, why don't you go ahead and tell listeners anything else they should know about you, and most importantly, where they can find you. So perhaps, Instagram or websites or otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. You can follow me on Instagram at acruz, C-R-U-Z, 909. I'm pretty active on the IG stories, on my postings. The photo booth guy, if you're in the local Southern California area and you have any kind of event going on, anything that's high end or even at a house party, the photo booth guy, we're based out of Chino Hills. We're the only photo booth rental company in the Inland Empire with north of 200 five-star reviews. We're it. There, you can find us on Yelp or www.thepbguy.com. thepbguy.com, P as in Paul, B as in boy, guy.com. And we'd be more than happy to assist. But yeah, just words of wisdom, and anything that you can put your mind to, you can definitely accomplish. The big focus is we're taking a look at the end state goal, reverse engineering it, create these checkpoints, and then just have the discipline to attack these small checkpoints, make something complex into something simple.
Wonderful.
Love it.
Outstanding.
Man.
Love it. Yeah, Andrew, thank you so much for coming on our show today. We really appreciate it. And just fabulous content, you know, no surprise. And love the stories, my man. Thanks again. Really, yeah, really a pleasure to have you on.
I just love it, man. Just a timeless approach, man. Like you said, a man of systems and processes and deconstructing things and developing the checkpoints and executing your line through them. You know, I'm getting close to 60, and you look like I'm I'm probably 30 years older than you, brother. And you know what though? There's no replacing, you know, some good old school deductive and inductive reasoning and execution. So I think that's timeless, and I think you're an example of that, brother. So thank you so much for coming on the show, and I'm definitely going to hit up A Cruise 909 and start checking out the IGTVs and that hair. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The hair. I remember that hair
is timeless too.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I'm a zero on the sides right now. I might have to shoot him something. I'm zero on the sides. That's about all I have in common with him. That was right.
There you go.
Zero. All right, folks. Well, ma'am, this is another great show here on the Concierge Coaches Show, Christmas edition 2019. Be with us in January. We have a whole new lineup of fantastic guests and content for you. Check us out on our social media touch points, the Concierge Coaches on Facebook, Instagram, and of course, LinkedIn. We're also on iTunes, and I think we're on iHeart now. Some of our shows are on iHeart, so that was a lovely pickup for us. And I can be reached at conciergecoach.net. And Justin, how can folks reach you?
Nimmergood.com.
All righty then. So until next time, have a blessed Christmas and holidays, and we'll see you here next time on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Take care, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.